Okay, you should have a handout. That will be the outline that I like to follow. The paper's very long, so a few of those points I'm going to just skip right over, but you'll know when I'm doing that. It'll be pretty obvious. In 1899, well-known Toronto Baptist pastor Elmore Harris published in the Chicago Standard an article entitled "The Boer War as Canadians See It." A while later, the article was summarized in the Toronto-published Canadian Baptist. The essence of the article was a defense of the British and Canadian imperial cause in the war in South Africa, and the aim of writing in the Standard was to address the concerns of Americans over and American criticisms of the war. Harris indicated that while Britain was not completely faultless in the months preceding the war had been forced upon Britain and the empire by the Boers, the Dutch in South Africa, and consequently, Harris argued, the British and Canadian cause in South Africa was just. This ever so brief glimpse into the mind of a Canadian Baptist preacher reveals some of the imperial fervor of many Baptists in the late Victorian years. Well, in the early 21st century, Western colonial history is usually lamented. Barely over a century ago in the late Victorian period, imperialism was seen in a very different light. Canadian Baptists, like many of their co-religionists, were enthused about imperialism in general and Canada's role in the British Empire in particular. What makes their commitment to imperialism so fascinating when examining spirituality is that imperialism and spirituality were for many virtually inseparable. The following is an examination of this late Victorian Baptist imperial spirituality. And by imperial spirituality, I simply mean that Baptist spirituality was fused to imperialism and in many cases was inseparable from it. And that will become clear as we carry on. Elsewhere it has been argued, and I argue this in a book I recently published, elsewhere it's been argued that Canadian Protestant churches at this time were imbued with an ardent imperialism and were firmly committed to the imperial cause, such as the war in South Africa. And this particular paper confirms those observations and reveals the unique way in which Baptist spirituality was shaped by and fused to that imperialism. Let me just make a comment on sources. Much of the research that I'm drawing on today is based on Canadian Baptist newspapers. As noted elsewhere, the Canadian Protestant press during this period of time acted in a nation-building role, and Baptists were no exception in this regard. And the Baptist papers were filled with commentary on political events, as well as reports on church activities related to national and imperial concerns. And it is in this commentary that we get a glimpse of imperial sentiment that was so fused with Baptist spirituality. Comment on Baptist spirituality. Glenn Hinson has stated, quote, "Baptists have approached spirituality much as they have approached virtually every other concept or practice, with a great deal of diversity." Baptist spirituality for the has been marked by a number of elements, as we've already seen today. For this study, the historic Baptist emphasis on justice and missions is most relevant. And what the following research shows is a Baptist spirituality marked by justice and a concern for world and global missions, but that concern for justice and missions fused to imperialism. In fact, it was these two foci, justice and missions, that actually bolstered their ardent imperialism. And there were specific late Victorian events that heightened imperial fervor, and it's in these events that we get the best glimpse of this latent imperialism, but also concern for missions and empire. And you can see those events on your outline. Let me make a few comments on the imperialism of the period as well. We're looking at a period coined the Age of Imperialism, or the period of New Imperialism, late 19th century. Although Canada had celebrated its dominion status in 1867 and was a young, optimistic nation, it remained part of the British Empire. While French Canadians were relatively unenthusiastic about the British Empire, not surprisingly, English Canadians took great pride in belonging to the largest empire that the world had ever seen. Pierre Burton's observation that, quote, "the youth of Canada breathed in the spirit of imperialism with their breakfast porridge," aptly describes the depth of imperial sentiment in Canada at the end of the 19th century. And Robert Page notes, no single topic moved Canadians as powerfully and as emotionally as the empire. The events of the previous decades had engendered this growing passion for the empire. International tensions and uncertainty, tariff concerns with the United States, not to mention the fear of invasion by the United States, and the Queen's Golden and Diamond Jubilees had made closer ties with Britain seem not only natural but absolutely necessary to defend Canada and to promote its global influence. And such excessive displays of imperial passion seen in, say, the South African War would not be seen again in Canada until the First World War. But now what I'd like to do is look at missions and empire and injustices in empire and make some concluding comments. At the same time that European empires were growing around the globe, Protestant missions were rapidly expanding. The 19th century, as you most likely know, has been coined the great century of Protestant missions. British Protestant denominations were at the vanguard of the missionary movement, sending over 9,000 missionaries out of a total of 17,000 total Protestant missionaries from all countries. In fact, by the middle of the 19th century, the missionary spirit was being hailed by contemporaries as, quote, the characteristic feature of the religious piety for which the Victorians were rightly renowned. Baptist life in Canada, like that of their religion, or like their Victorian co-religionists in Britain, was marked by a piety that had at its heart the spread of the gospel, global missions. And so now what I'd like to do is go through how this concern for missions was fused with concern for the empire. The first point there, Queen Victoria's Golden Jubilee, you begin to get glimpses of the commitment to monarchy and empire that foreshadowed the coming zeal to empire that would be seen later on in the 19th century. But there's still, even at this point in time, a connection being made between the reign of Victoria and the spread of missions. That's made clear. The Canadian Baptist, for instance, concluded, "No movement of Her Majesty's eventful reign has been more wonderful, either in extent or success, than the mission work of Protestantism." Another Baptist paper claimed that the friends of evangelical religion are more numerous, earnest, and effective than they were 50 years ago. And these convictions that the reign of Victoria was a boon to missions would only grow stronger over the following years. Her Diamond Jubilee, much more extensive commentary during 1897. This was celebrated in June of 1897. And during those days, the British public was, quote, able to gorge on a rich diet of ceremony and display, speech making, and official processions. The highlight of the celebration was the Queen's June procession to St. Paul's with over 50,000 troops from around the empire taking part in that procession. And Canadian Baptist commentary on the Jubilee reveals a deep pride in the empire and Canada's place within it. Numerous times Canada was claimed to be the most important component of the empire, and imperial accomplishments were seen to be Canadian accomplishments. Baptists of Ontario and Quebec supported the recommendation of the Governor General to set aside a Sunday as a day of thanksgiving for the reign of Victoria and to hold a special service of thanksgiving. And one benefit that was frequently noted in the various commentary on the Jubilee was the advancement of the gospel under her reign. And Victoria was deemed to be a faithful and godly Christian, and her reign led to the spread of the gospel. There's extensive commentary. I just give you a brief portion of a sermon preached in Nova Scotia by a Reverend Adams. It's in your handout. Adams went on in that sermon to detail the virtues of the Queen, the blessings of empire, and the ways in which organizations such as the British and Foreign Bible Society were able to expand dramatically their global outreach under Victoria's reign. In fact, Adams claimed, England had done more for the spread of Christianity than possibly all other nations combined. And the obvious conclusion of a reign so beneficial to Christianity, Adams declared, was that God had providentially raised up Britain for that particular task. Queen Victoria's death. I hope I'm not blowing through these points too quickly, I'm trying to give you the sort of the cumulative effect as opposed to just narrowing in on one point. Despite the details of the funeral service of her death, details of the funeral service in London made it into Baptist publications, and a number of churches in Toronto and elsewhere held memorial services. And I'll talk more about the connection between Victoria's death and commentary on justice and missions in a moment. The Boxer Rebellion, a rebellion against imperial rule in China. Despite the fact that Canadian Baptist overseas mission work was in India and Bolivia, Canadian Baptists had a lot to say about the troubles in China in 1900. In June 1900, Canadian Baptist publications began reporting extensively on the conflict. They quickly came to the defense of imperialism and missions in China, but they were also quite critical of the excesses of imperialism and were quite willing to blame the Western powers for many of their overseas troubles, especially their troubles in China. Like many British missionaries, Canadian Baptists expected that Western governments, Western imperial powers, should provide protection for missionaries in China. The call for protection was motivated by the reports of atrocities to missionaries, and based on factors such as the citizenship of missionaries, justice, legal rights, and historical precedents. The British government, it was argued, had the responsibility to defend its citizens in foreign countries, even when those citizens were missionaries. And all Western governments had a clear duty to give the protection that was needed. And the fact that missionaries had the legal right to be in China due to the various treaties that were forced upon them bolstered the claim made for intervention on their behalf. The return of missionaries to China with the promise of military escort was praised, and one editorial pointed out that military intervention had saved these Christian communities from extinction, and that intervention was needed on a continual basis to maintain the missionary presence. One last point on missions and empire, then I'll make some summary comments. The outbreak of war in South Africa, often called the Boer War, commonly called the South African War, the Anglo-Boer War, the outbreak of war in South Africa led to expressions of concern for the work of the church and missions in South Africa. Baptists in Canada agreed with those in Britain who believed that, quote, a triumphant Africanerdom, in other words, the Boers winning, a triumphant Africanerdom would spell spiritual and material ruin for the region's native peoples. The reason for such an anti-Boer position was simple. Boer rule was considered to be a hindrance to missionary work. In the Baptist press, the Boers' treatment of the natives, as they were called, was decried. Canadian Baptist paper defended the actions of the British and damned those of the Boers. It claimed that the Boers were the enemies of progress, ignorant, bigoted, cruel without measure. They have even stood in the way of the missionary work. They treat the natives worse than dogs. The Western Baptist echoed this view of the Boers and mission work. It pointed back to the days of Livingston as an example of the Boer mistreatment of the natives, and as an example of the Boer hindrance to missionary work. Elsewhere in the Baptist press, more unflattering portraits of the Boers. They were painted to be, quote, primitive 17th century people, unsophisticated, unkempt, unwashed, surrounded by a crowd of grubby children, and to top it all off, they had no desire to evangelize the natives. I think it's in a Methodist publication at the same time, the Boers are called the stupidest race of white people in the world. And basically the picture is the Boers destroy mission work because they mistreat the natives so. And if the British win, and if we win in South Africa, then the mission field will be open. In summary, Brian Stanley argues that, quote, if you wish to mobilize Baptists and evangelicals as a whole on an issue that divides the nation, the way to do it is to persuade them that liberty to preach the gospel is at stake. The examples noted above affirm this claim. Baptist spirituality was marked by a vigorous commitment to personal conversion and evangelical missions. And the events of the late 19th century fueled that passion. It seemed as if God had providentially established an empire that aided in the growth of the church. And Baptists were not ones to argue with God. The empire was good for missions, and therefore the empire was a good thing and needed to be supported. Let's move to Roman numeral point 2 and a time check. How are we doing? 50 minutes left? Really? Oh, so I can slow down. Justice and empire. You've probably heard a lot about evangelicals and social justice having a long history. Well, there's also a connection between Baptists and justice or social justice having a history. Walter Rauschenbusch and Martin Luther King Jr. are perhaps the two most well-known figures in Baptist life, whose spirituality was marked by a focus on justice, but there, of course, were others. For instance, Paul Dekar has proposed that 19th century Baptist missionaries acted as peacemakers when they acted as agents of reconciliation and fought against social injustices. Brian Stanley has shown how Baptist missionaries were involved in the struggle against slavery and injustice, and Marvia Laws has illustrated how Baptists in Jamaica resisted slavery and colonialism. So there's a history of Baptists and Baptist spirituality connected to justice issues. The identification of the British Empire with liberty went a long way back, predated the 19th century. But by the late 19th century, it was clear to Canadian Baptists that the British Empire was an empire that brought liberty and justice wherever it went. The empire had its problems and injustices. They knew that, they recognized that. But the empire was still considered to be the most benevolent and the most just empire on the face of the earth. In other words, where the Union Jack flew, liberty and justice reigned. Consequently, for Baptists concerned for justice, the best way to spread justice was to what? Spread the empire. Conversely, any contraction of empire was deemed a threat to peace, justice, and advancement of human progress. And then I provide numerous examples of that in my paper. But I'm going to skip the Golden Jubilee, I'm going to skip the Diamond Jubilee, and I'm going to skip Queen Victoria's death, because they all give examples of commentary connecting the advancement of justice with those particular events. I got 21 pages of single-spaced text here, so I have to do some condensing. But the Boxer Rebellion. Let's talk about the connection between justice and empire during the Boxer Rebellion. Embedded within the commentary on events in China was the conviction that European civilization in general and British government, education, culture, commerce, and technology in particular, was a blessing on those allegedly lesser civilizations that it ruled or came in contact with around the world. Canadian Baptists shared this vision of an imperialism that blessed, not oppressed. While this sentiment was embedded within much of the commentary on the rebellion, one clear example we can look at is from the magazine called The Messenger and Visitor, maritime paper. The problem of China, so the Messenger and Visitor stated, was a part of the larger conflict between the old world and the new world. China's conservatism had kept it in isolation, but that can no longer be the case. The world had advanced, and China needed to be a part of that modernization. The Boxers, it was argued, were opposed to modernization and fought by, quote, fanatical methods to stop the changes. It was conceded that modernization would bring disturbances to the traditional economy and people would lose jobs because of the new factories that the imperial powers would bring. However, it was argued that there was no way to stop the progress. Ultimately, the article concludes, the inexorable advance of Western influence and industry would be a blessing to China. Quote, the change will come, and the people of China will yet be blessed with a Christian faith and a Christian civilization. As Andrew Ross notes, by the end of the 19th century, this idea of trusteeship had become very influential among British missionaries. And this idea of trusteeship shaped attitudes towards race. Imperial sentiment among English Canadians also included a significant amount of assumption about race and racial categories. And these assumptions can be seen in all these different categories that I've laid out for you in your handout. The Western powers were continually referred to as the forces of civilization, and the Chinese were often portrayed as, quote, barbarians. The rebellion sparked an interest in things Chinese. However, many of the articles published to provide information about the situation in China portrayed them as culturally and morally inferior. And here what you have what post-colonialists call the creation of the other and the creation of the others to justify empire, a particular view of people that necessitates the need for conquest. But I need to keep moving. The South African War. During the South African War, you have the same type of discussion. Canada's prime minister, when the first troops were sent to South Africa, said this to 50,000 spectators as the first 1,000 troops were floating off to South Africa. The cause for which you men of Canada are going to fight is a cause of justice, a cause of humanity, of civil rights and religious liberty. This is not a war of conquest. The object is not to crush out the Dutch people, but to establish in their land British sovereign law, to assure all men in that country an equal share of liberty. And Baptist commentary on the war in South Africa was very much a discussion of justice, that justice would be advanced. And if Britain loses the war in South Africa, the empire would begin to crumble. And you get a sense of how that crumbling would be viewed by looking at that final quote on your handout. For our only choice in fighting in South Africa between the surrender of South Africa, for our only choice lay between the surrender and the present war. But look what happens if the surrender of South Africa or the British troops in South Africa occurred. Breakup of the empire, setting of the sun, setting back the clock of the world's progress for perhaps a century. Let me conclude. I know I've flown through some of these points, but I'm trying to give the cumulative effect. You get the detail in the paper. In conclusion, as commonly recognized today, the late Victorian era was marked by a potent mix of imperialism, missions, national destinies, jingoism, providence, racism, social Darwinism, the creation of the other, providence, and social justice. Canadian Baptists did not escape the impact of this welter of events, passions, and beliefs. There was no one view of imperialism, and there was no one official Canadian Baptist view of empire. However, it is apparent that late Victorian Canadian Baptist spirituality was shaped by the zeitgeist of the period, by the worldview, by the air that they were breathing. Not only had imperialism captured the imagination of European nations, not to mention the Japanese and the Americans, imperialism was also one form of Canadian nationalism. To be Canadian was to be an imperialist, or at least to be English-Canadian was to be an imperialist. And Canadian Baptists shared in those assumptions regarding race and empire that their fellow Canadians cherished. The Baptist passion for missions and concern for justice, it was believed, could best be helped by taking advantage of all that the empire offered. In fact, the zeal for missions and empire contributed to the zeal for empire. Anything that promoted missions, and the empire seemed to do just that, was supported and exploited. Anything that furthered justice, and the empire seemed to do just that, was also supported and exploited. This fusion of Baptist spirituality with empire may seem to be an anomaly today, but for late Victorian Canadian Baptists, it made the best sense of their world and of their faith. Thank you.